This is in any endeavor. If you believe you can do it, it ends up that there's a higher statistical probability that you'll be successful, because people who believe they can achieve end up being more successful. However, that's a psychological reality. That's not actually that they actually, it's because they believe that then God makes it happen. It's not a spiritual reality. Or is it? That's one of the questions. Yes?
My question would add is, if you're actually even actively doing something, you're already showing that you're believing in it. And so,
okay.
So, I mean, if you're, okay, so saying, well, okay, if you believe, then you'll do it. So the act of doing it is, you're already showing that you believe it. So if you fail, then how can you doubt that you're believing strong enough when you believe enough to actually do it?
Right, but you can go to an interview and say, do you believe that you're going to get the job if you go to an interview? So the people who believe that they're going to get the job are more likely to exude the confidence that is going to get them the job, as opposed to the people who doubt that they're going to get the job, and then they actually may not get the job because they're projecting a different image. So that's where there's this element of belief, but that's, like I said, a psychological reality. So the idea that if I just believe that God then will catch me, and then if he didn't, it means that you didn't believe hard enough. So
there's
What?
Well, there's a reason.
Oh, yeah, because you're not worthy.
No, I'm saying that maybe there's a better purpose towards the end.
Oh, right, or Gamzu L'Tova. Or this was really whatever God does. See, that's the kind of thing. Like, are we just playing games here? That's the question about these stories. Are we playing games that anytime something happens, this is just a comfortable way for us to deal with it? If whatever it happens, if it works out, so then that's great. And if it doesn't work out, well, whatever God does, he does for good, he does for the best. So it works out that anything that happens, you have a way to handle it. Does anyone read the book? What?
Go ahead. I was just going to say, how long do you need to wait?
What's right. And when you die, you look back and you say, you know what? I actually don't think that was for the best. That was a bad thing. So really, when you're dead, right at that moment, you can make a judgment call. Because so, otherwise, you don't know. It may turn around. I mean, I bet the fact is that most things do turn around in life. But I think that's another thing. I mean, how many things can experiences that people go through? Did anyone read the book? It's called Stumbling on Happiness. So if you read the book, that is very interesting psychologically. So it turns out that people who undergo tragedies are psychologically programmed to find the good in the tragedy. It's like the way we're designed. So he said that he asked a bunch of people questions. Let's say this disease happened to you, where you're in crippling pain 99% of the time. How many of you feel that you would commit suicide? And let's say 98% of people felt that they would commit suicide in that situation. And then you actually go to the people who have that disease, and you, how many of those people commit suicide? 5%. So he says, now everyone thinks they're miserable, but they're telling you they're not miserable. So do you believe them or do you not believe them? Because we all imagine that in that case, we would be miserable. So it turns out that human beings have a capacity to find good in terrible situations. That's our nature. That's human nature. So that is something that, it's a coping mechanism that God designed us with. So let's see if we can, sorry, I'm getting distracted here. What were our questions? Do we have all the questions? Did I miss any questions? Yeah. What, you wrote them down?
Which one do you want to do?
No, I just want to know, what did we say, four questions?
I have five.
Five questions, even better. Okay, yeah.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
A family son died, suicide, came home from Iraq. How are they supposed to deal with that?
Right. So there's tragedy that happens.
Supposed to see the positive light when their son, only son, suicide, and how are they supposed to deal
with that? Are you supposed to say to them, whatever God does for the good? While we're saying that, let's just throw in one more question, which we'll probably deal with at a later session. How does free will fit into this? When we say whatever God does for good. Now let's talk about a free will decision. I know that suicide is a free will decision. Let's say it's not for the moment. But let's say something happens as a result of somebody abusing his or her free will and then bothers you and causes a tragedy to you. So did God do that? Is everything that God does is for good? Let's talk about a child who's been sexually molested and it ruins them and they're in therapy and they're miserable and they have a whole problems their whole life, their entire life from this. And let's say, and you happen to know that many people are psychologically crippled by events that happen to them and they do not overcome it and they do not grow from it and get out of it, and there's a lot of mental illness that results from other types of abuse that people do against each other. So are we going to maintain in a serious way that whatever God does for the good? Or are we going to maintain that that's not God and these things are man, whatever man does is not for the good, but God, was he involved? Was he in charge of this? I mean, let's just ask these questions. I don't know how much we can answer them satisfactorily, but let's just bring them up. They have to be asked at least. So, I mean, does Gamzu Latova do it for you in these types of a situation? I always say, and this is something that I say when I speak, and people who are religious get upset at me, and I say that I think that some things in life happen, and they're bad. Like, they're really evil. Like, Rav Soloveitchik talked about that. There is evil in this world, and these things happen, and they're wretched and painful, and it probably would have been better for the person if it didn't happen. I believe that we can say that. Yes?
But where do you draw the line? How do you know, like, where do you know man and God?
Right.
Is good as God and bad as man?
Or right. No, I would have to maintain, I mean, don't shoot me on this, but, like, if God allowed this to happen, then this was his decision as well. If God's, who's in charge here? God's in charge. Then when it happens, when man does his free will, God made man with free will, so he knew that these kind of things were going to happen, and this was God's design for the world, that these things should be allowed to happen, and whatever God does for the good. I mean, let's try to reconcile that, but that would be my approach. Yeah?
I'm not sure. Okay. But what about the idea that what you're given in a certain amount of time, even before tragedy, is a gift? I mean, where does that fit in? Because there are things that are terrible that happen, and there are tragedies that happen, but then there's a whole history before that, and then there's whatever continues on post that.
Mm-hmm. So, that's true. You're right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because if that was the case, whether you're the person that's dreaming about whatever the tragedy is that was in that discussion, or whether you're the person that is the sick person, you still have a history before and after anything.
That's a good point. I hope that this will address that to some degree. Yes. What's your name?
It's Simone. I don't think, I just don't think that everything happens for the good. I think that makes no sense whatsoever.
Okay.
And not only,
well, we're still going to have to explain this.
Not
something,
only is it illogical, yeah, but that I've never learned that from doing Jewish classes, that everything happens for the good. It's like, it's convenient that it does, but...
Well, the Talmud definitely says it, though. These are statements. These papers are from the Talmud, and this
good,
is a statement of the rabbis.
Is, like, then you have to define good.
Okay.
Like, what
that
is going to
be. Let's start with that approach.
Individual happiness, or is good for what the world needs to develop into.
Right.
You know, or what.
Right. That's a very good point.
And you should suffer so that others can obtain the good.
Okay.
It's not. Everything's not about us and our lives. It's about a whole bigger picture.
Right. That's a good first step, that good and bad is not necessarily defined as my personal pain and my personal pleasure. I think we start off that good, just a very basic from the time you're this age, good means things that make me feel good, and bad is things that hurt. And with our brains, we can see that that's not necessarily the case. The classic example, I guess, would be surgery. Surgery definitely hurts, but you can see that there's a larger purpose and a greater benefit. So you would put yourself in pain for the purpose of healing.
Or childbirth.
Yep.
For drugs.
Yeah.
No, I mean, pleasure. But
yeah. That's true. So you have you put yourself. Yeah, if you
yeah,
take drugs, you have pleasure. Okay. So where do we begin in answering these questions? Okay, the first. What? Yes. Yeah, unfortunately, I can't remember where 60B is in which Gemara. I'll have to look that up for next time. But the one Nachum Yishtamzu is in Talmud, the Tanis one, in the back there. Tanis 21A. So, okay, so the first question is, I tend to take these assumptions that the philosophy presented in the Talmud is true, and now how do we see that as true? Let's assume that the rabbis are telling us something valuable and helpful. What is it, and how can I use it? So I think that Rabbi Akiva, the story, the donkey, the rooster, and the lamb, tends to be a little easier to understand. And I think we already said what it meant. That, so basically what happened here? He's traveling along, and he wants to sleep somewhere for the night, and they turn him away. So this happens, you can imagine this. You're driving, you've been driving a really long time, you're exhausted, you need to stop. You go to a motel, and there's no spots. They have no vacancies. Then you go to another motel, no vacancies. And not only that, you're in a very dangerous area. That's kind of like what Rabbi Akiva, because at the time when they were traveling, traveling in general at night was very dangerous. Traveling during the day was very dangerous. Traveling at night was doubly dangerous. So he's in a situation where he's in pick your neighborhood, and he's exhausted. He has to stop, and there's no place. So instead of getting angry, a lot of people, I think actually, one of our emotional reactions is that we get angry at God for these types of things. So perhaps that's something to bear in mind when the antidote is whatever God does for the good. I think it's now did God make the motel full, or was that a coincidence? Is that just chance? But we are very quick to blame God for anything that goes wrong, I think, unless you disagree. There's a pasuk in Mishlei, I can't remember the exact verse, but he says, man messes up and blames God. Now, did man mess up in this case? Could you have planned your trip a little better? That's always the first question, right? Man always says that. The first thing you should ask yourself is, what should I have done differently to see that I would not end up in this mess? How could I have thought of this whole situation differently? But the fact is, you're here, you're in this mess. Perhaps you contributed to being in this mess. And we're very quick to say, why would God do this to me? So how often do you look at a situation and you think, God put you in a situation when perhaps you yourself put yourself in that situation? That's question number one. Okay, but here you are, you're in the situation. So the counter to that is whatever God does for the good. Now again, so what does the person think? The person thinks to himself, or the Akiva says, I have no lodging. Your natural inclination is to be angry, upset, furious. But instead, the rabbis are suggesting that we switch it for this idea of whatever God does for the good. Again, our questions still stand. Does that mean God is actually doing this? Or is this just a lie that we're telling ourselves? Or if not a lie, a view? What are we supposed to take from this? Is this I wouldn't call it a lie, but maybe a perspective. Yes.
But why do we have to turn to God right away? Why can't we just say, okay, I'm in this situation, let me see how I can fix it? Why do we right away jump to blaming someone or something? That's
a good question. Now, it's possible that the Talmud is just simplifying it, and there wasn't really anything else for him to do. I mean, the fact is he's on the street. Let's assume he tried a whole bunch of different cases. He tried to find lodging here, and lodging there, and lodging there, and lodging there. He tried a whole bunch of things, and everyone's turning him away, and now he's just desperate and upset.
So I don't know, why can't you just say, all right, let me just do whatever I need to do to spend the night, however, instead of saying
that this is God.
This is God.
Okay.
Is it because he suffered that he feels that negative emotion, which is lingering, needs to be, you need to find a reason for it? That's human nature.
I don't know. That's a good question. Why doesn't a person, when a person confronts suffering, just say, like Rav Soloveitchik said, what do I need to do to get through this? Why bring God into the picture at all? Why does it have to be a faith thing? Why not just say, all right, what are the facts and what am I going to do about it? Okay, I would suggest that maybe because human beings, for those people who are handling it that way, I don't think that's inappropriate in any way. And again, we'll talk about faith versus action over the course of the months when I come. But I think that for the question, for the person who is questioning and saying, why is this happening to me? Because maybe that's the sort of question that some people enter into suffering with. Why is this happening to me? The Talmud is presenting an approach. So if you're with that question, then the answer would be whatever God does for the good. So let's take that philosophy and see where that leads us. As if you're not questioning that, then you wouldn't take this approach.
I just don't know if you're talking about extreme situations. Or like any time you have a problem, like during the day, things pop up, and every time you ask, why is God doing this to me? I mean, that's a waste of time.
Yeah.
Like you could be fixing a problem.
Right.
So I'm not sure if this is okay.
Well, these look a little. This looks a little extreme. It's a little extreme
right
here. I mean, his life is on the line. He's in danger. So let's take those. But
okay.
I think in general, if there are frustrations, if a person is getting frustrated, then they would say, whatever God does is He does for the good. That would be an approach. Let's see where that leads us. Okay, so there he is. He's feeling okay. He handled this first problem. And then, next thing that happens is a lion comes and eats his donkey. And then a cat comes and eats his rooster. And then wind comes and blows out his lamp. So all of the things that were causing him security, he now has nothing. So I think also human beings have a certain threshold. You're going along and you can handle this. And you can handle the fact that you're stopped and there's no place for lodging. So you decide, okay, I'm going to sleep in my car. And then somebody comes and damages your car and makes it, let's say it's snowing out and now it's freezing and now your window's broken and you can't stay in your car anymore. So now you're thinking to yourself, okay, but at least I have my dog with me and my dog is going to give me some security. And then a random crazy thing happens and your dog ends up getting knocked out. So as you keep having things to cling to, and each thing is being pulled away. And I think sometimes this happens. You just have one of those days where you can handle a certain amount, but then another thing happens, and another thing happens, and another thing happens. I mean, this doesn't happen that often, but I guess this is the paradigm where it's getting really bad. And he's just like, everything is happening. And so now we have four things in a row. 1, 2, 3, 4. And you get to the point where it becomes a little challenging to say, whatever God does for the good. I mean, you might end up just breaking or cracking or, you know, what will happen. So the thing that I find implausible about this story and that I don't find happens in real life at first glance is that does it really happen that the next day this is what happened for Rabbi Akiva. He did all these things. He's very righteous. He says, oh, whatever God does for the good. And amazingly, next thing you know, there's an explanation for everything. And everything works out that everything bad that happened to him, God really had something good in mind. That's what it seems like. Does this happen in life? You find out that the thing that happened, you lose your job, and you can't pay your rent. You get kicked out of your apartment. And then your relationship is over because of the stress. And then, I mean, just keep going. And then it turns out that really, I don't know, you make something up. That's what happens. It turned out that there were robbers, and they captured the city, and everybody ended up being captured. So it turns out that all the people who were, actually, they just did a study on that, by the way, I just read, that the people who lost their jobs earlier are actually functional and happier than the people who are stressed out waiting to lose their jobs. Turns out.
No.
But anyway,
we just
so maybe not. Maybe not. But that was the latest study. So it turns out that everything that it all becomes clear to you. And all the things that happened that you were so upset about, it's suddenly clear that it was done and this is a much better way. Like how often does that happen in life? That you look back and you say, well, how often does that happen? Let's take a poll. That something that you thought was really negative, and you look back and you say, I could really see how that was a good thing that happened.
The next day,
So not the next day. The next day is like here. Okay, so we have a decent majority who are holding by this philosophy.
You know what?
Okay.
When you just said the situation about thing compounding thing, compounding thing, I don't
give it more time.
It happens that way. I know that in this it does, but I really don't. I believe that bad thing compounds bad thing, and I really think that there is mind over matter with some situations.
But again, that's this story. But we'll talk about that story. Yeah, that's the second story. Yeah.
So what about when something bad happens to you, and you know some people have this way about them that they just work harder to improve their lives or change things. So maybe if something bad didn't happen to them, they would see where they are. Mm-hmm. How can you attribute everything to God? Because
I don't know.
I'm really struggling with this.
Okay.
Because God helped you do it. How? By showing you what you needed to do.
I would just say that I look at this type of a thing, but that God designed the world in a certain way. So He designed us that when we end up in a situation like this, that would be our response. And if that's our response, then that is an overall plan for humanity that God has. He knows that people do that, and he designs stumbling blocks in life, and He knows that people grow from that. As we said, that the majority of people here astonishingly raised your hand and said that there's something bad that happened, and it ended up turning around. You were able to see how it turned around. I mean, that's pretty shocking. And this is the way that nature is designed. This is the way that God's world is designed. Whatever God does for the good. It is part of the design. But you were saying that this a lot of times doesn't.
I think it applies sometimes. I mean, in the workplace, when I was downsized, and then I ended up putting on my jacket and going back in the pharmacy for 6 months, and then I ran into somebody who was in business school that I knew, and I ended up going to business school, and then after that, I ended up going on a job interview for a job in Connecticut, which I never thought I would take. I mean, you can kind of argue, like my mom, like, oh, everything happens for a reason. And, I mean, what about this?
Right.
I just think that there are times it applies. I mean, to the person that just kind of has all luck, the person that gets the promotion every 6 to 9 months for doing the same type of work or even working less than you, and there's been people that work really, really hard that don't get that promotion. So I think it's kind of really, really hard for it to apply 100% of the time. I think I would say maybe 15 or 20% of the time.
We had more than 15 or 20% situation.
But the thing is, people are always waiting to get that revelation,
right?
Like a quick fix,
right? It's not the next day. It's an exaggeration. The story is an exaggeration, and I think the lesson that we have here in the first story is: don't jump to conclusions when something happens. You have to realize that this is not the end of the story, and you don't know what the future holds. And I know we made a joke, like at the end of your life you can look back, but that's a fact, that with perspective and with time, things look different. And that is something that we must keep in mind when we are struggling. That's the first story. The first story is you have to keep your perspective, don't have tunnel vision and think that what's happening now is the way that is. You make a judgment that it feels bad, this is bad. We have to wait and see, and we have to find our own resources and come out of it and grow stronger. And that's something that is the human response and important for us to do, and to introspect whatever it is that there's your response. But don't think that because this happened that this is the end here. There's more to this. That's all. That's the first story. And I think that's the design of the world. And I mean, in my own personal life, I remember certain tragedies happened. I had a friend, and we ended up having the same time. I lost a pregnancy very, very late, and she lost her husband at the same time. And so we kind of buddied up in our grieving. And you kind of get in that situation, where in that place where you think, this is the end, it's always going to be bad. And now you look at us 5 years later, I got 2 more kids, I never would have thought that. And she is remarried, and we look at ourselves and we're like, who would have thought that our lives could take this direction. You were going in that way, and you had your life focused on a certain path, and then life had a shift, and you have to go with it. There's no other choice. But whatever God does for the good, in the sense of God puts bumps in the road. And, I mean, it's like a cliche, you know, the door closes, a window opens. You have to look for that window. You just don't know how life, what other things life is going to hand you, and you have to look for that. That's the first story. That's this one. Now, this next one, Nahum Ish Gamzu, is taking this a step further. Okay? Now, he says, it's not literally what Gamzu Latova does not mean it's for the best. Does anyone know what the word Tov means?
Good.
Gamzu Latova means this too is for the good. It does not mean that this is the best. And I think that's a very important distinction. Because like I said, I think that you're going to find in life enough evil happens and bad things happen that if you had to evaluate, well, was this the best way my life could have gone? I don't know if we're qualified to make that decision. Because like I said, there's enough mental illness and tragedy that happens that I'm a little shying away from saying that this is the best way that things could happen. And if it is, then how come there's this concept of a messianic era where things are going to be better? If everything's for the best already, so then we're done. But you see that there's room for improvement in terms of man's behavior, in terms of situations. Yeah.
So you mean like there have to be children. Okay, so there are children with disabilities, so that initially we could have enacted a Disabilities Act for, I mean, is that what you're saying? So like some people have to suffer so that there could be something better?
No, that's not what I'm saying. Okay, let's look at the story. Okay, so what happens? This guy, he's not from Ish Gamzu. Now, it says, very interesting, so the Jews have to send the gift to the Roman Emperor. And Nahum is chosen because he experienced many miracles. And the Hebrew for that is melumad ben nisim. He was trained in miracles. The Hebrew is very, very interesting. He was trained in miracles. Not just that he experienced miracles, he was taught or trained in miracles. So that's already going to be a big hint as to what type of a person he is. Why was he chosen for this test? He was chosen because the Jews knew that something bad was going to happen in this whole situation, and we need Nahum there. We need Nahum because he has a certain attitude. What does he always say? He always says, this too, I like to say, instead of Gamzu Latova, this is for the best, this too can be turned around. Let's look at it that way. Gamzu Latova, this also can be viewed in a positive way. This too can be good. That's the literal. This too can be good. Let's put a spin on this. We can turn this around. So when we go to the emperor, and this is right man's hop here, when we go to the emperor, and we don't know what's going to happen, but the emperor is probably a whimsical guy, coward, capricious, okay? And when something happens, we need someone who's a spin master. We need someone who can say, we need to turn this around, everybody calm down, turn this around. And sure enough, what happens? So they have all this precious gems and pearls, and it's trying out with the gift, the appeasing gift. And what ends up happening? Things happen. The robbers come, they steal, they're dishonest, and they put it with earth. Could you imagine this? You go to the emperor with a gift, and it's dirt. I mean, I would have a heart attack. It's just like, this is bad. I mean, I'm sitting there, and the emperor opens it, and he's looking mightily insulted, and he's about to kill you and the entire Jewish people because you just insulted him. But Nahum, what does Nahum say? We can turn this around. And you need a guy like that. Okay? We need this attitude. When things happen, we have to say, and that's really the question that you ask. Okay, the question is, can a person say, there's one way of saying, all right, I'm going to hold perspective and I'm going to see. That's the first story. I'll hold off perspective. I'll see where this is going. Let me not judge this. But this is much more proactive. This is much more creative. All right, here's my situation. Can I turn this around? And I have to become used to looking at my negative situations and saying, how am I going to turn this around? That's Gamzu Latova. So what does he say? He says, how am I going to turn this around? And then it seems the prophet Elijah then appears. So again, that is usually in the Talmud, that's an indication of behind the scenes, God helping a little bit. So God appears in the guise of a Roman senator. We could just say that that means that it was an amazing stroke of luck that a Roman senator happened to remember don't the Jews have this story with Abraham, which you were talking about, this whole thing where Abraham used to, the four kings and the five kings, you know that story? So Abraham, as Lot, his nephew, gets captured, and he decides that with 318 men, that's a good question, maybe we'll do that story. With 318 men, he's going to go and he's going to attack four kings, four mighty empires. And that, because he believes, does he just believe that he could do this? I mean, what kind of a crazy action is that? But no, if you believe it, then it can be done, right? Is that Judaism, that you should do foolhardy actions? Because if you believe it, then we can do it? But so maybe we'll do that story. But in the meantime, in that story, it says that he beat them. He beat the four kings. So in the shot, in the plain text of the story, it just says he was victorious. The Midrash, the rabbis, say this story. I think I wrote it down. It's in the Midrash Tanchuma. It says that God protected you against your enemies. What was the protection? That Abraham, our father, would take dirt and he would throw dirt on them and it would become arrows and bows. And he would pick up straw and throw it on them and it was made into swords and spears. Now, again, you read this and you think, am I supposed to take this seriously? If I took this as a battle plan, this is the Jewish battle plan, we go in and we throw dirt and we hope that it turns into spears? I mean, that's crazy. And is this the Jewish idea of faith? But again, you read these rabbinic statements and you wonder how we're supposed to approach them. But again, that is also the rabbi's spoken metaphor. So what would be the metaphor of if they threw straw and it turned into spears, or they threw dirt and it turned into arrows? What would be like a metaphor? How would that, can you imagine that?
Just use your wits when you're, use your wits when you're in a situation where you, for example, if there's less of you and you're going to fight a stronger army, then be more creative.
Right.
Figure out how to get to them from a perspective of, find their weakness.
Right. And you'll see that, yeah. Anyone else? How would you approach this if it's a metaphorical idea that you threw straw and it turned into an arrow? What would that mean? Like if you were a person telling a story and you tended to exaggerate, that's how the rabbis taught. Like they would say, it's like I went and I found bread growing on a tree. That would be a metaphor for us going to the supermarket. If you could imagine in the days of the past, how long it took them to do laundry or how long it took them to make bread, but now if I told you that in the year 2000 you could go and pick the bread off the trees, you would say, how is that possible? But now we know. We go into a store and we pick the bread off the trees. I mean, not off the trees, but it's like a metaphor. So that's how the rabbis speak, because they say in the times of Mashiach, we'll be able to pick the bread off the trees. And our Imam always says, we're in the time of Mashiach, because you can pick the bread off the trees, not literally, but you can pick it. It's very easy to get food right now. You don't have to go through all that.
So, I'm not 100% sure of this bird turning into swords. That's like a protection thing? Is that what they're talking about? It's a protection?
Well, it means the way that they won the war. The way that they won the war.
It's not aggressive. It's like they have intention and they have, they're throwing straws. They have intention, but it's not doing things that are illegal or doing things aggressively to kill.
Well, I think it was, because
it's
rocks. So we know that rocks could be deadly. Dirt and, dirt and straw, you're right. Well, there's a lot to uncover here, and we're turning, time is running short. But let's just say, yeah, you want to say?
I'm just going to say, just using whatever you have, whatever resources you have.
Right.
And
having them be effective.
Right.
So that would be the metaphor, that when Abraham was doing stuff, that he used whatever he had, and it ended up being effective. It looks like we're done here. Let me just hold it. He's getting cranky. So the last thing, let's just say, so someone mentioned before, made a very good point, that the straw, they didn't actually use the dirt. They just took the dirt to the war, and they were able to vanquish the enemy. And I believe that there's a psychological reality there, that since they went in with the confidence They were then, they had a problem before. They couldn't overcome this enemy.
We can't focus.
Let me just, I just want to finish this point in 2 minutes. I will hide him. Okay. So, they were unable to beat this enemy. But when they had the Abrahamic dirt, they had the psychological strength to do it. And that was Nachum Ishkamzu's brilliance, where he said, oh, this dirt is special dirt. This is the Abrahamic dirt. This is, you know, God sent this, we sent this dirt to help you out. Now that's a very creative solution when you're hit with this, you were sending jewels, and now you've got dirt, and you somehow convinced the Roman Empire that this is good dirt. And obviously, the next thing that happened is that the other people were not able to do that. All right, I guess I'm going to have to stop here. Yeah?
I was going to say, is this the same thing as saying if you believe it, you get the way?
No, it's not if you believe it. What? Well, for the Romans. Well, that's back to my trapeze statement.
Right.
That is back to the trapeze statement. But the point was not so much that the Romans were successful. The point is that Nachum was in this terrible, dire situation, and he was able to turn it around because he was being creative. And that when bad things happen, you have to think, how can I get out of this? And with creativity, you will be able to find solutions that you were not able to think of before. You have to start thinking creatively that we can turn this around. When God makes situations, there's a lot of times ways to turn it around. Not always, but that's a way. That's an approach to life that you should cultivate.
If I wish my hands, can I go?
I've got to go. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to thank Jesse for agreeing to teach. I'm sure you guys enjoyed it. So I was going to do it myself. And we're looking forward to more.
Right.
Welcome, how are you?
Thank you.
It's beautiful.
Thanks.
Guys, 5 minutes. We're going to get started. More work. More Torah.
Thank you.